Hello, OT friends, and welcome to the Uncommon OT series. I'm Patricia Modis, and I'm your host, a Filipino-American, native New Yorker, currently based in Los Angeles, bulldog mama, and an uncommon occupational therapist myself for the past 22 years. On this podcast, you will hear me proudly feature the unique careers of occupational therapy practitioners working in non-traditional and rural emerging practice areas, settings where OT is uncommon. I invite you to receive a dose of OT inspiration to learn, to think outside of the box, and to be energized and motivated to follow in these unconventional paths. Happy listening. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to highlight and extend a special thanks to TrueLearn and Picmonic, our sponsors. Picmonic is a visual mnemonic learning tool that's been research proven to increase retention and help students ace their exams. It uses audio-visual learning and intelligence-based repetition algorithms that really help with long-term retention while studying. It is an excellent learning resource and study aid for OT and OTA students. Picmonic has built a better way for students to prepare for tests, whether you're studying for classes or getting ready for the NVCOT exam. Try it for yourself and sign up today using the link in the show notes and using the code TRANSITIONSOT to score a discount of 20% off of your Picmonic membership. Happy studying! Welcome back, OT friends. In today's episode, I'd like to introduce you to Sarah Good. Sarah is a registered occupational therapist and a mindfulness teacher based in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. She has more than 20 years experience working in hospital, school, and community settings, and since 2007 has worked with clients in their homes and communities. Both in Sarah's personal and professional life, she uses nature and mindfulness meditation to bring calm and joy to each day, and has been practicing mindfulness meditation regularly since she became an occupational therapist. Sarah strives to offer ways for OTs from around the world to connect and learn about mindfulness together through her programs. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce you to Sarah Good. Welcome to the podcast, Sarah.
Thank you very much for the introduction and for having me on the podcast.
Thank you for taking the time to be with us and to share with us your knowledge and your expertise in mindfulness.
Thank you.
But before we get into all of that, I would love for you to tell us a little bit about yourself to get us started.
All right. Well, I'm living, as you mentioned, in Ottawa, Canada, and I'm a mother. So that's probably my biggest occupation and role in life. Mm-hmm. I have two teenagers, and I'm married as well. During my free time, I love doing things out and about in nature, particularly water. I love swimming in the summer outdoors and paddling cross-country skiing in the winter. I also have a regular mindfulness practice myself and a group that I meet with each week with a mindfulness teacher. And I love reading novels. So that's kind of one of the things that keep me occupied. In my work life, I've had a private practice for almost 10 years now, where I see one-on-one clients, often veterans, military veterans, first responders, dealing with mood issues, persistent pain, sleep issues. And so that's a mix of right now virtual and seeing people in their homes as well. Mm-hmm. And then around 2020 and the pandemic, I realized how useful some of these tools of mindfulness would be to share with other occupational therapists. So I broadened out and started teaching other occupational therapists how to use mindfulness meditation themselves and with their clients.
Oh, fantastic. And that's really going to be the meat and potatoes of what we're talking about today, right? Because I think it's important to share with other OTs how, and I think that's kind of the big question, is how can we incorporate some of this some of these approaches into our own daily practices, right? So I can't wait to kind of delve a little bit more into that. But right before we do, would you mind sharing with our listeners what motivated you to, to start doing this? What motivated you to start doing this? And then what motivated you to share on this platform?
So I was motivated to start practicing mindfulness meditation myself during my first job as an OT, where I worked in a hospital in palliative care, and it was a lot of emotions as a new graduate that I was hit with of clients dying, which is a successful outcome of palliative care, of course, but it's still jarring to get used to that sort of being confronted each day with our mortality. So at that point, when I worked at the hospital, I was quite interested in I read some books by Jon Kabat-Zinn, and in the resource room of the hospital, we had all the CDs of his meditations. So I started borrowing those CDs and using them at lunch. And then over time, there were a chaplain actually at the hospital started running a group, which gave me more human interaction and mentoring. And actually started a group, which I brought an instructor in for, but a group for other staff working in palliative care who were feeling, some emotional overwhelm. And so it was a practice that I kept up for a few years after I worked in palliative care. And then it did dip down a fair bit when I had babies, and that was just sort of busier time, harder time to find time by myself. In retrospect, it's probably time I needed it the most, but it's often when we need it the most that it's the hardest to carve out that time and ask for that time. And then, somewhere in there, my dad had a painful condition, and the physiotherapist said to me, "Are you familiar with mindfulness?" And I thought, "Okay, yes, I gotta bring that one back into my life." Kind of went home and told my husband, "Okay, I had a plan for this. 20 minutes every day, I'm gonna go do this." Which didn't end up being 20 minutes every day, but it sort of set the intention, and I spoke it out loud and asked for it. And so that was in the early 2010s by then. So when I came back to mindfulness by then, I'd been working for several years in Ottawa, in not in my own practice, but I'd been working for a group private practice. And so as I did that, I also kind of poked into what the evidence was for using mindfulness. As here I was devoting, my own time to this. And I was quite impressed. There was just a lot more evidence and resources than there had been 10 years earlier on, sort of just the benefits to people living with chronic conditions, to using mindfulness. So that sort of inspired me, or felt made me feel like I had enough information to back up to just sort of introduce it to my clients. So I wasn't teaching it to them. I was more saying, "Have you read this book, or would you consider downloading this meditation, or would you consider going to take a course at the Ottawa Mindfulness Clinic?" So I was sort of just sharing the resources with clients rather than leading them in meditation or teaching them about it. So that was kind of my first step of really bringing it into my professional life, not just I mean, I was bringing it into my professional life as soon as I was supporting myself and to stay in the profession, right? But then I was actually sharing it with clients in a "here it is," and then I would hear back from clients who went, took a course, or read a book, and I was seeing, evidence myself of individual clients who are benefiting from this. So then, in 2014, I then applied to do the training to become a mindfulness meditation teacher. So I did that training through the Ottawa Mindfulness Clinic. And I found that to be it's interesting. I dabbled in all types of different books and different meditations up until then, but doing that program, which got me taking the course myself and then helping teach and then doing sort of teacher training weekends and doing a silent retreat and then helping teach the course. So I through that whole process, I realized, wow, I was just sort of skimming the surface before. I was using it as a really helpful tool where, when I was doing the meditation, I was getting a break from, the day-to-day stressors that were coming at me. But once I was not meditating, I probably wasn't bringing awareness to my body and moving through my day with a mindful approach so much as using it as a break from the rest of the day.
Got it.
So, see, going through that program really helped me move to seeing how mindfulness can be applied to the whole day, not just when we're in a sitting meditation or a lying down meditation. And so, following that program, I then started teaching and co-teaching to start the program at the Ottawa Mindfulness Clinic for people living with persistent pain. So they have a number of programs. Some, quite a few of them are more general ones for anyone who's interested, and some for people who are experiencing burnout at work and so forth. So I taught the one for people with pain.
Got it.
And I did that up until 2020 when they closed down.
Okay. Was that because of the pandemic?
Yeah. A combination. I mean, the two psychologists that ran the Ottawa Mindfulness Clinic were past retirement age and decided it was time to retire. To do other things. And they haven't even fully retired. I think they still teach they still see individual clients and they still mentor professionals. But the space that we used for teaching and the, you know, the having a reception person who would register people and all that disbanded at that point. So then there were a group of teachers that they sort of empowered to take on doing the courses within our individual practices and kind of, you know, refer. So if I get somebody who would rather do the course in French, I know which teacher can teach it in French. Or if I get somebody who wants to in the evening, I know who will teach it in the evening. If they get somebody who's living with pain, then they send them to me. So we've got kind of a connection of the teachers that were within that. So I've been teaching it within my own. Since then, I've been teaching it to clients within my own private practice, both as individuals and also running it as an online group as well. And then in 2020, I thought, well, there's a lot in this program, in this evidence-based 8-week program that could be applied rather than targeting people with pain. I could modify it to target occupational therapists with really two goals in mind. One goal is for each occupational therapist who's doing the program to be able to use it themselves in their own lives in similar ways to, you know, how any human being might use it in their own personal lives. And I was motivated particularly to offer that to occupational therapists because it's been a tough few years to work in healthcare. And I really think occupational therapists are amazing professionals. And I love this profession and want to see people who have chosen it as their careers be able to stay in it and to thrive in it.
Yeah.
That was kind of goal one of it. And goal two of it was for occupational therapists to feel like they have a place in introducing it to clients. Because in a lot of settings, people feel like, oh, no, that's just for the psychologist or the social worker, or that's not really occupational therapy. So while people who do the program don't come out as certified mindfulness teachers in any, they do come out with the ability to have a solid practice themselves and to be able to bring it to their clients, lead meditations with their clients, or help their clients if the clients are taking a course, help them integrate it into their daily occupations, because they might be taking a course with a different professional who's not, you know, as helpful at
about
adding
that.
It into the day.
Yeah. Mm. Yes. Oh gosh. So I have a lot of questions, or I have a few questions, and I guess it's just more kind of tying things together. So here you are, 20 years in to your OT practice, and you're now teaching OTs about mindfulness. And so I guess just to kind of take a step back as far as your path is concerned, right? Because that's what our listeners typically are trying to gain some information about is how does one get there from OT school? Here you are, started your private practice, started your own practice in mindfulness, right? And I just heard you say a little while ago that that's really key first, right? First and foremost, before you can teach mindfulness is to have your own mindfulness practice. Along with your own personal practice and basically the training from the Ottawa Mindfulness Clinic, you felt equipped to go out there and begin to teach the approach to clients.
And I think that, I mean, even though the program at the Ottawa Mindfulness Clinic certainly helped me really apply it to my whole life, to even apply to be a teacher in mindfulness, you need to have established mindfulness practice.
Practice yourself, yes.
So they're not trying to train people up as teachers who haven't, tried using it in their own lives for some period of time. And there's a variety of ways people can train to be teachers. So part of my approach then with OTs is let's see if more OTs can bring a practice into their lives, right? Rather than necessarily needing to make that, because it's quite a commitment to train as a mindfulness teacher. And luckily there's a good number of OTs who have done that. But I mean, it does require quite a big amount of time and, and a commitment to do a silent retreat every 2 years going forward. And so it's not, it's not a small amount of time that's needed for it. Certainly it wouldn't have been something that would have been appropriate for me to do any earlier than I did. I just wouldn't have felt comfortable leaving my kids for that long. And so there's so the kind of for me it's been a very gradual journey. I imagine some people might hear about mindfulness for the first time and 6 months later be applying to become certified teachers, right? And that's fine. But for me it was a very gradual process of integrating it into my life and integrating it into my work. So yes, definitely. After I'd finished the program at the Ottawa Mindfulness Clinic, I definitely felt comfortable teaching it, and I did co-teach it with one of the founders of the Ottawa Mindfulness Clinic for, several times before they then had a newer trainee working with me, and we were co-teaching it that way, right?
Yes. So thanks so much for adding that. Yeah, because a lot of folks want to know, how do we get there? What it's OTs are very training certification based individuals, and I think that that's I can guarantee you would be the first question that comes up is how do we become one, or where do we get trained to be one? But the emphasis really is in your own practice first, because I think there's a lot of connections, right, that you'll make during training and in comparison to your own personal practices that'll really probably benefit and help you become a more effective mindfulness teacher.
Absolutely. And some of the people who've done the program that I offer for OTs have gone on to train to become mindfulness teachers as well, right? So that's certainly the idea is start with building it into your life and your work and see if that's a direction you want to go. And then people have gone on to be teachers in different mindfulness programs. So the program I offer OTs isn't a certification per se. I mean, people get a certificate in terms of continuing education, but it's not a, say, a
A
certification
mindfulness
in mindfulness
teacher
teachers. No,
certification.
it's not a mindfulness teacher certification. It's a program for OTs where they can interact with other OTs who are doing this and can, and have self-paced modules to work through, meditations and handouts they can use with their clients and so forth.
Well, I think this might be a great segue into your work. Would you mind telling us more about that?
So the work, yes. So the so I've had a variety of iterations of offering this program over the last few years, but what I'm offering it's an 8-module course as part of the program that's pre-recorded so people can self-pace, although I do slow people down from going more than one unit a week because that really the idea is to absorb it and do the practices, not to spend a weekend going through all the material. But it's so that's the pre-recorded modules. But then in addition to that, we have mentoring calls where people can come on and we do a meditation together, and people bring questions and we talk about different issues and how people are managing to incorporate the learning from the program. And then I do have a membership community, people who want to continue on with that, with those mentorship calls and support, and sort of getting new information and new meditations each month following the course. So I've got that. And then for people who want to just sort of dip their toes in and not quite dive into that program yet, I have mindfulness master classes. So those are either 60 or 90 minute programs, which I attempt to make very low cost, and they're presented either by me or by another occupational therapist on a one specific sort of case example of how mindfulness is used by OTs throughout the world. So for instance, working with children or using mindfulness to help avoid burnout in the profession, with a couple on polyvagal theory and better understanding that, using OT in nature is one of them. So there are a whole variety of different master classes. So they're live events, but then there's also replays of all the archived ones available. So people who want to sort of try out a 1 hour, 1.5 hour sort of commitment can experiment with those.
Yes, I saw a great library on your website, which we will make sure to include in our show notes so that folks have access to that. But yeah, I was perusing the variety of the variety of subtopics and just found it to be so interesting.
Well, good. Good. I've got,
So
yes, there's certainly quite a few there. And those are available really anytime. Whereas the course I'll be launching again this fall. So there'll be another enrollment for people who want to participate so that people can be in a cohort and do it
okay.
together. Yeah. But
So, and
there.
this is in it. So, one can either take the self-paced option or be part of a cohort.
So right now I'm doing it as part of a cohort. So
Okay.
and then but it's not as if there's you need to keep up at the same pace. So it's all
True.
I'll have the enrollment open and people can sign up and then people will, can go through it's the pre-recorded material at their own pace and come to the mentorship calls with wherever they're at. So if it's technically week three in the course, but people have only done week one material, that's okay. They can show up with where they're at. It's not a high pressure. It's not a high pressure program that you need to keep up. But because that way people who are in the mentorship calls, you know, I can offer them regularly while people are going through the program.
Yes.
And then if people want to stay on and continue doing mentorship calls, then they can stay in the membership community.
And this is your programs are open to anybody around the world. Any occupational
Yes.
therapist around the world or OT practitioner.
So the ones for occupational therapists are open to any OTs in the world. The ones I run for people with persistent pain are only open to people in Ontario because that's where I'm registered. And I have had a number of people who are not OTs also do the program who are in, as long as they're aware that it's an OT program. So social workers, physiotherapists, people who aren't a long way from, you know, other allied health professionals really. So they can, you know, be okay that they're diving into a group of occupational therapists and as long as they fit with that.
Can you talk about, I guess, what a typical session or a typical, would you call them sessions? I mean, I know they're modules and they're already pre-planned. However, you do have these mentorship calls with OTs who are learning or in the process of sort of taking in all of the knowledge. Can you give us a little glimpse as to how some of those calls might sound like or might seem like?
Absolutely. So the pre-recorded modules, yes, they follow a fairly very structured. So there's an introduction week, but beyond that, each week has a theme which has a meditation, which is that then I've recorded and people can do it you know throughout their week. And then a way of then a part of the module on how you can apply that to your life and how you can bring it another one on how you can bring it into your clinical setting, if that's what you do, and then didactic piece on that theme, depending on the theme. Some of them need less explanation than others. So if it's about how our bodies handle stress, there's more didactic than if it's about awareness of the body, right? So those vary a little bit as to how much teaching there is versus more practicing. And then I do include some handouts and so forth that people can use themselves or share with their clients. And then during the mentoring calls, we would start as well with a meditation. And then typically I have some ideas of, depending on where people are in the course, as to where I'm going to lead the conversation unless there's questions. But if people have specific questions or struggles to get time in their day, perhaps to practice, or struggles with trying to introduce the concepts to clients, or questions about how I would handle a particular scenario, then that's the direction we go. And often other OTs in the group have answers and support too. So it's not me teaching per se. It's more mentorship and facilitating group, because there's a lot of wisdom in any group of OTs that's not just one direction. So that's more the format there. So and those calls then are recorded, so that if people aren't able to come to a call because of time zone or they're busy, they can still listen to the recording, and they can certainly send me a question or something they want me to touch on that wasn't clear from some part of the course to them, or a specific clinical scenario. They can send that my way, and I'll talk about it or throw it out to the group during the call as well.
Would you be able to talk us through a brief mindfulness activity or
Yes,
exercise?
absolutely. Absolutely. So we can do that. So we can do this is so what I'll talk you through is just a very brief orienting exercise, which is how I often start my client appointments. So you can stand up for this, you can sit up, whatever you're comfortable with. And if you'd like to close your eyes, you're welcome to do that. But if you feel safer with them open, just let your gaze fall softly in front of you. And then start to bring awareness to a sense of your feet and their contact with the ground beneath you, if they're touching the ground. Focusing in on the other touch points in your body. If you're sitting, that may be your thighs and buttocks, perhaps your back on the chair, your arms resting on your lap, on the arms of the chair. Really feeling which parts of your flesh are in contact furniture or ground beneath you. Letting yourself rest into those points if that feels comfortable and safe. And invite you to bring awareness into your face and notice if your tongue can relax and soften a little bit. And if it can't, that's okay. And notice if your eyes can rest back to your head and let the muscles around your eyes take a little break for a moment and see how that feels. Now you can start to invite in an awareness of the world around you. If you can notice any sounds in the background, if there's anything in the air, you can particularly feel a breeze, a temperature, moisture, or a smell. And then very gradually, you can let your eyes flutter open and look around the space where you are. Recommend looking around nice and slowly. Now your eyes and neck move very gradually around to one side, perhaps looking over that shoulder if that range of motion's available for you today. And then slowly coming back to midline and looking around the other direction. And coming back to our shared virtual space here. All right, thanks for practicing with me.
Thank you for that. Wow, much needed. Much
Yes.
needed pause. That felt really wonderful. So you might start a session that way, or you might start a coaching call in that way.
Yeah, I might. Certainly with OT sessions, I start that way because it's nice and short. With the mentoring calls, I do try to do one that's a little bit longer and more focused on the practices that we do in our program. But this is a good one for I use it enough that the students in the program become familiar with it so that they can use it with their own clients. Yeah.
It's just a great way to kind of ground. I love the portion, particularly in the end, where you're looking around, because there is something about that. Yeah, that's just sort of scanning the room, right? I'm in my room here, so there, I feel pretty safe here, but that just sort of sealed the deal for me. You know, that just Yeah, just being able to scan the room just made me feel even safer than I already was. So I really love that piece. Thank you.
You're welcome. And you may notice, or you may not have noticed, but in there, I never bring breathing in unless I know that that's. I try to make it always an option if we even do bring breathing, and that breathing is something that often doesn't feel like a safe spot for a lot of the people that I work with. So, so the idea of deep breathing exercises or breath awareness exercises is great for some people, but not for everyone. And of course, I don't know your story and your listener's story as to whether that's the right thing. And so I'd say making sure that whatever we're doing in terms of mindfulness practices, especially with our clients, is a choice, an invitation. And that's sort of a way that we're constantly getting consent during meditations. It's not, okay, everyone, close your eyes now, and we're all going to close our eyes. It's, you could close your eyes, you could look down. Often when I lead that, and I never mention the breath during that particular orienting exercise, people often say, oh, that was lovely that you guided me to deep breathing. And I think, well, I really didn't. That's just where their body's at, right? So that's interesting because for them, the breath is safe. So that's kind of one of the parts of mindfulness that, and one of the reasons I think as OTs, it's super important that we're not just recommending apps for our clients to practice mindfulness, right? There's a reason they're working with us, and we wouldn't just recommend a cognitive behavioral therapy app. We would either know that we're trained in cognitive behavioral therapy and use it with our clients, or find another therapist that is, if we felt like that's something that our clients needed, right? So I think that's an important thing to think through, is if we're working with clients that are already experiencing some type of injury or illness, which by the nature of our work they usually are, let's make sure that we're not doing something that's going to add discomfort.
I love that piece on how the sensitivity to the use of language, right? Because it's so important. And I definitely heard that in your guidance, the choices, the options, you know, if it feels comfortable, if it feels right, if that's available to you. I remember he hearing you say that, right? So again, that just makes the practice more accessible for the practitioner. So
Exactly.
thanks for adding that. And I love that that's a big part of your program.
Yeah, well, and I have to say, the only all those mindfulness master classes that you see on my website, there's only one that's actually offered by somebody who's not an occupational therapist, and that's Dr. Willoughby Britton, who is she's an academic and a psychologist, and she gives one on dealing with the adverse effects of meditation. She runs a whole center and program for people who've essentially been injured by meditation practice. So And I think it's really important for us to know that without it being something that scares us off leading meditations or working with our clients on meditation. So that was one of the mindfulness masterclasses that I personally learned some of the most new information on how to really make sure that it's done with a trauma-informed lens.
Yes. These are such great points that you're making. Would you mind sharing with us, and you know, maybe you have bits and pieces here already, just some recent highs, right? Some recent highs and some recent lows in your, in this endeavor. I know that at least lately, I feel that I've been getting a lot of questions around mindfulness myself. And certainly a lot more OTs are very much interested in incorporating these practices into their own practices.
Yeah. So I think one of the, I mean, adding the mindfulness masterclass was certainly more recent than offering the whole program. And so that's been really a fun thing. So that's definitely been a high because I've gotten to work with other occupational therapists and because it's sort of a lower time commitment, lower money commitment. There's more people who sign up for them. So that's been fun. That's definitely been a high. I'd say one of the challenges that I face right now is that I'm offering an in-depth program for OTs. And I think often people think, oh, yeah, I know what mindfulness is. I don't need that, or there's free resources out there. So sometimes that can be a bit harder for people to understand the kind of really game-changing nature of doing a more in-depth program versus skimming the surface. And I've been doing mindfulness for a long time before I went beyond skimming the surface. And so part of the point of my program is to help OTs fast-track beyond skimming the surface to really understanding how it can impact them and their clients in a deeper way. Yes. So that's, you know, and that's something that I think when I first launched it and during the pandemic, people really needed that support. And probably in people's personal lives, they had less they were able to do. You know, we weren't able to socialize or travel and so forth. So people perhaps were more apt to take a course. So that's probably more of a challenge. So I'm launching it again this fall, and hopefully I'll get another good cohort. I've really enjoyed all the OTs I've met through this. So that's the other high, is I do it partly for myself because I love connecting and learning from everyone else. Yeah.
Yes. And I think that, you know, you're doing such a service to the profession in terms of, you know, this is it's not covered in any of our curriculums, or at least in any of my curriculums in OT school, right? However, we are in the business of breaking down tasks, right? We're in the business of breaking down activities into their smallest, minute, you know, components. And I just see mindfulness and the work that we do kind of really going hand in hand, right? And I think the in-depth nature of the program that you're offering is essential. again, it's going to help us sort of bridge, right? Like bridge what we know and putting it into practice. So I guess as far as that's concerned, do you have any tips? Are there any quick tips that you can leave our listeners about how can we begin to at least, you know, begin to scratch the surface, like go beyond just scratching that surface outside of, in addition to taking your course?
Absolutely. So I think if people have already tried some meditation themselves, certainly try reading a book on it, you know, trying to understand a bit more of the ideas behind it rather than, you know, in addition to using perhaps pre-recorded meditations. So certainly that's one, is reading a book. Now, balancing that out, that it's often important to not have the book reading take over the time that we would have meditated and now we're no longer able to meditate. So, you know, it depends how much time they have. Doing some type of retreat is another way as well. So some type of in-person silent retreat, or depending on people's tolerance of risk in terms of virus and ability to travel. There's also or organizations that are offering online retreats. Again, you need
Yeah.
to have a home life that's going to allow that, or it's just going to be chaotic for you. So, that's but that's an option as well. So I'd say yes, taking a course. Obviously, I would love it if people took my courses, but beyond that, there's a lot of great books out there. Starting with that would be a good place, I think.
Well, I love that OTs have a course specifically designed by an OT to really learn from. This is a wonderful resource for us. So thank you for having it. And we're definitely going to, make sure that all of this information is included in our show notes. Can you tell us what is the cost of the program? What is the cost of the course? I know it's self-paced, and you said that it's low pressure, and from what you've described, it sounds incredibly supportive.
Yes, I do endeavor for it to be supportive. So the cost of the program is $497 US. And
Very
the cost of
good.
the master classes is 29, depending on, or if they sign up later, it's 39. So either 29 or 39 for the
Okay.
master classes.
And then, in order to avail of the master classes, does one have to be part of your membership community?
Nope, anyone can just sign up for a master class.
Very nice. So that makes it very accessible for everybody. So
Yeah,
thank
that's
you
my
for
goal,
that.
is to make it accessible. So no, somebody can, I say it depends on the timing, because I offer a lower price when people are signing up way in advance,
Yes.
but in the range of under $40 USD, people can sign up for one master class and hopefully learn something that will change their practice right there. So I would probably recommend that as a first start for people if they're trying to dive in. Rather than diving into a whole program and putting close to $500 down, they can start with something, finding one that seems the most applicable to them, and doing one of those master classes, dipping their foot in.
Got
Yeah,
it.
and
I think
that's
that's
purposefully
great.
a low cost entry. That's the idea.
That's great advice. It's a great first step. Now, I know, thank you for sharing too the cost of your course. Again, helpful for our listeners. How about any money matters information? I guess, you also spoke of a private practice, right? How do you bill for your services in your private practice? Do you go through insurances? Is all cash based?
Yeah, so I have a variety of sources of funding. So certainly, Veterans Affairs Canada, when they send me referrals, then they cover the cost of the appointments. Same with the Workplace Safety and Insurance Board. So if they send me a referral, they'll cover the cost of the appointments. And then I have private clients that pay me. Now, in Canada, people have extended health benefits, often, not always, but a lot of people do have extended health benefits. So then they can take that receipt. If they have occupational therapy on their extended health, they can submit the receipt and get some amount back. So that's true for some of my clients. Other clients are paying out of pocket, but certainly people deal with their own extended health insurance. Different than the US health insurance, I think.
Got it. And when you refer to, I guess, or when some of these individuals or organizations refer to you, do they refer to you as for do they refer for occupational therapy services specifically? Okay. And mindfulness being techniques, or if that session were to be centered around mindfulness, it's something that's generally reimbursed.
So I'm in my private practice, removing a bit off from what I'm offering to OTs, I'm offering occupational therapy. So mindfulness is certainly something I incorporate into my occupational therapy, just by the fact that I am practicing mindfulness, right? So it means that I'm part of my own way. I'm using therapeutic use of self is a mindful approach. Not all the clients that I work with want to practice mindfulness, and they don't have to, right? I'm not requiring that of people, certainly. And so it's, I'm feeling out clients. And I do often ask in the assessment, if you've done meditation, are you interested in it? And sometimes the answer is yes, and sometimes the answer is no. We can work together either way. But I'm also utilizing acceptance and commitment therapy, which is a mindfulness-based approach as well, right? So that's, again, that's not requiring or asking clients to do any meditation per se. Although most of my clients, I do some type of grounding exercise with at the start of appointments. I don't always label it as mindfulness because it doesn't need to be labeled as mindfulness. And some people have a negative reaction to that.
Yeah.
But it could just be standing up and doing a gentle stretch. Could be, you know, where we're doing some movements where we're bringing our arms up as we inhale and down as we exhale for a few rounds. So I'm incorporating that with clients' consent into most of my appointments. It's very rare someone doesn't want to do something like that. But certainly that's, you know, they don't have to do that. So certainly, you know, it's clear from the case managers and so forth at Veterans Affairs or Workplace Safety Insurance Board that I'm using mindfulness with the clients that I'm using it with, but I'm using a variety of other modalities, you know, motivational interviewing, acceptance and commitment therapy, some education, sleep approaches. So I've got a lot of different modalities that I'm using, but the interesting that you ask that, because that's probably the number one question I get from American OTs is how do you bill for it?
Yes.
Nobody else asks that because it's not, this is just OT, right?
Yeah.
But it's probably something that I'm guessing from the questions that people need to really delineate exactly which approaches they're using as part of OT. And this might not be on everyone's drop down menu of options. Is that part of the issue? Yeah. So that's, so in that case, I mean, I would say if you're trying, if you're in the US and you're using health insurance and you're saying, okay, I'm offering occupational therapy. And they're saying, well, which approach? I mean, I think mindfulness can be peppered into a lot of approaches. So if you, what you're primarily doing is CBT, say that, and mindfulness is peppered into it. If you're primarily doing self-care, building a self-care routine, mindfulness can be part of that, right? Or we're bringing mindful awareness to somebody who's trying to get back to showering after hip surgery, the less likely they are to fall, the more likely they are to enjoy their shower rather than have it be just one more thing to do. You know, so there's ways, certainly OTs that have been in my program, I've talked about there, they are in acute care and getting people to maybe bring their own soap because it's got a better smell than the hospital soap. And they've, you know, or being able to really make that feel like a self moment of self-care in the shower rather than an activity they need to be able to perfect so they can be discharged from the hospital, right?
Yes.
And so that would be a mindful of bringing mindfulness to something that the answer on an insurance form would be on helping people with their activities of daily living. Yeah, I agree. If you're using a whole session to teach people mindfulness, that's might be harder to bill in some contexts. When I'm, the only time that would be true for me is if people are signing up for my course and then they're very aware and they've consented that they're coming to a course.
Yeah.
On mindfulness, but the bill that I produce that they can give to their extended health insurance just says occupational therapy.
Yes. So, and I think that's the point exactly, you know, right? And I think that can also apply here in the US. It's not necessarily something that you have to include in your documentation per se, right? That this is the approach that you're using, but it's just something that's somehow infused into the work that we're doing anyway. And I like the word that you used, peppered. It can be peppered. So thank you for that clarification. And also for sharing with us some of the money matters and salary pieces. So much great advice for other OTs out there. Can you think of any other advice for OTs who are interested in following your path?
Yeah, so trying it out. I mean, say exploring what fits for you, whether that's going to a yoga class and incorporating some of the parts of the Shavasana, the end of yoga class, into your sessions if that feels better, or if it's using recorded meditations with your clients or by yourself between sessions if your time allows for that. Finding something that fits, that doesn't feel too big to start with. And then we can include perhaps that in the notes that I do have a free Facebook group for occupational therapists. So that's a way for occupational therapists to connect with others, to post a question that other people will see and answer. And as well, it's a spot to learn more about where you can learn more. Come and try one of the master classes and just dip your toe into something that suits what you're trying to deal with right now in your own practice. And I think keeping in mind that doing the meditation is a practice itself, but it's not a principle of self-care. So what I mean by that is I read a good book lately on it's called Real Self-Care, and it's written by a psychiatrist, and she really outlined nicely that the most important is we think of what the principles are that matter for us in our self-care, not the exact practices. So for me, a sitting meditation might be an important part of my day, but for somebody else, it might be going for a run. If we're both getting at the same principles, or the principle, we may not have the same principles, let's assume we do. We may both be getting at the same principle using a different way. So I don't need to look at that and say, oh, well, now I better do a run as well. And she looks, or he looks and says, oh, I better do a sitting meditation as well. And suddenly, you know, each of us has eight things we need to fit into every day that, you know, different practices that meet our self-care principles. So by that, thinking of what really matters, setting boundaries or creating time to be more aware of your body, or being more present with your emotions. So thinking of those big picture things and what are the practices that can lead you there. And for me, mindfulness meditation does allow me to meet all of the things I just mentioned right now. It helps me to set boundaries and helps me more aware of my emotions. It helps me more aware of my body. But other people might have something, I mean, yoga practice can give that. An exercise routine can do that. Scrolling on our phones can't do that, right? So just being aware of what it is that we're doing with our time that can lead to those principles.
Yes. And it may even mean different things on different days, right? Depending on
absolutely
what it is that we're needing that day.
Absolutely. It can mean different things on different days, in different seasons, in different type, in different times in our menstrual cycle, in weekends versus weekdays. And, you know, so there's all different ways we can incorporate that same principle could be reached in different ways at different times.
Can you think of any common myths or misconceptions about your work and mindfulness that you'd like to demystify today?
Yeah, I think one of them is that mindfulness and meditation mean the same thing.
Yes.
And I think that's an important one to distinguish, because there's lots of different traditions that have different forms of meditation. And if my client already has a form of meditation or prayer in their lives, I try to incorporate that as an important occupation for us to build on. I'm not trying to teach them a new type of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to help them make sure that there's space for that, that type of prayer or that type of meditation. So that's, you know, so there's meditation and mindfulness, which doesn't necessarily need to mean that one is sitting and doing meditation. Mm-hmm. So mindfulness, you know, we can have a mindful approach when we're with our children. We can have a mindful approach with our clients. We're out in nature. For me personally, having a formal mindfulness meditation practice allows me to go out in the world with a more mindful approach. Not all the time, but more of the time.
Yes.
So I sometimes call it Big M, which is like capital M, you know, so that's my mindfulness practice, capital M, I'm practicing mindfulness, versus lowercase m, like I'm out in the world and I'm being more mindful. And for me, if I'm not having that capital M practice, I aim for kind of Monday to Friday. The weekends, I find it's often harder to get in. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. But if I can kind of keep that to Monday to Friday, and then I feel like more of the time I can approach my life mindfully. If that falls down to less than that in a week, then I start to feel myself getting less patient or feeling more overwhelmed personally, right? So figuring out what that, so demystifying that doesn't need to be, for many people would be able to have a more mindful approach through their lives because they've had good exercise, right? Not because they've had a sitting meditation.
Yeah.
So meditation and mindfulness are not the same thing.
So thank you for making that distinction. Yeah, a lot of folks feel or think that meditation is being mindful, right? So there's a
Absolutely.
lot of confusion between the two words and how they kind of coexist with each other. So thanks for that. Anything else that you would like to share with our listeners? This has been such a wonderful conversation. I've learned so much and thrilled that we're able to share your resources and your knowledge with other OTs out there in the world.
Yeah, well, I say don't hesitate to reach out to me, to other OTs. And if they're unsure how to approach, they can reach out. They can reach out in the Facebook group or send me an email, and ask me a question. I'm happy to hear from
Yes.
people.
We will definitely include your information in our show notes in terms of how folks can reach out to you. And I guess I want to, something that I'm also a part of is your newsletter. You have a very regular newsletter that you put out, and I just find your emails super helpful. You announce basically the different things that you have going on, and oftentimes if you have a master class included in your newsletter. So I would highly recommend our listeners to, yeah, to sign up for that, to be abreast of, yeah, of the different of the latest things that you're up to.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I often don't feel like it's very regular, so I try to treat myself with self-compassion on that and do it when I feel like I'm right in the spirit of it rather than because it's something I should do. But I appreciate you mentioned that's helpful. So yes, there is people who sign up for any master classes I do put on that list, but people can also just sign up for the list. So I'll send. So I do have a number of free resources on my website, which people can access. And I ask people to sign up for the their mailing list in order to get those. So that includes a video on grounding exercises I use with my clients, a handout on sleep, and a variety of other up a handout on the body scan. So there's a number of things people can download to get themselves started from there as well. So I'll give you the link for that afterwards as well.
Thank you. So, how do we find you? Follow you? How do we support your work? Is it okay? I know you already invited folks, but I like to just ask if, it's okay for folks to reach out to you if they had any questions.
Absolutely. So people can definitely reach out to me if they have questions. So the Facebook group, the Mindful OTs, I'll send you the link for that. That's a great way for
Yes.
people to reach out to me. People can also go to my website. That's sarahgoodot.ca. And within that, it's the website for my whole practice. So there's a choice of other occupational therapists so that once they go in there are, there's all the different professional developments. There's
Yes.
also in there a tab on other podcasts that I've been on if people want to learn more different aspects. And there's also a page of free resources there. So those would be good ways for people to get started at learning more about my work.
Thank you, Sarah, again, for sharing your knowledge with the OT community, with our listeners, and just for sharing your path, right? Again, this is all about showing other OTs how it can be done. This is about going towards an uncommon path and sort of paving the way for other OTs out there. So, thank you for creating that space for us and for being an amazing resource for the rest of us.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much for your podcast. I've enjoyed hearing from other OTs in the world on that. So I appreciate that.
That wraps up another inspiring episode of the Uncommon OT series. Connect with me at www.transitionsot.com. And don't forget to sign up to be part of the Transitions OT community. By doing so, you'll receive my latest compiled list of Uncommon OT practice settings, the latest news on mentoring offerings, Uncommon OT live events, non-traditional OT resources, and more. You may also follow me on my social media pages on Instagram and LinkedIn. And if you love this episode, head on over to Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, and Google Podcasts to follow, rate, and leave a review. I also ask you to consider pledging your support to my passion podcast project by being a patron on Patreon. It is very much appreciated. Sending big OT love. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.